Seeking to find what you want for us every day. There's lessons all over the place in the Bible and from your disciples and from Jesus and from your inspired word. Pray that we keep our hearts open and our minds open to see those things and not only listen to them today and hear what they are, but actually put them into practice whenever we're out in the world. And we pray that we heed your good advice and your good direction so that we can find a home with you in heaven one day. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so lesson five. So lesson two from lesson five is tonight. So hopefully no one here is scarred from what we did last time. Hopefully you didn't have bad dreams about pandas or any of that kind of fun stuff. Tonight we're actually going to stick straight with the lesson. So where we kind of left off at the end was there are three different, I don't know if I want to say versions, but three different descriptions of the event. One of them's in Matthew. Here's what we went over, the parts that it talks about. Here's what we went over in Mark and how it talks about. And also in Luke, this is what it talks about the event. And we discussed the similarities and the different words and kind of how if three different people saw the exact same thing, how they might use different words to describe some things. And so that takes us to, let's talk about the event. We've got that established. We've got that baseline, that foundation to understand that this is three different individuals' angle, if you will, on it. And so let's start into some questions about from our lesson. So according to Luke, for what purpose did Jesus go up to the mountain? Can you remember from our story?
To pray.
To pray, right. And can anyone think of a reason why this might have been more needed at this time than any other time?
This is the height of his controversy.
Mm-hmm. So he's actually, you know, really going up there, his popularity, and also about, you know, his recent, I guess, controversial, I guess, description of how, you know, you need to, you know, partake in my body and some other things that really confused a lot of people. Remember, a lot of people left, right? A lot of disciples left. So it's not that it's more needed, I guess, necessarily at this time, but I can see how some people would take it that way, that it might be more needed. So he went up in all versions. So who did Jesus take with him? Peter, James, and John. So he took the three up, Peter, James, and John. So I've got an interesting question. So at least I think it's interesting. So Peter, James, and John went up, right? So Peter, James, and John wrote a book about it, right? So there's... Did John ever write about it?
No.
No? James, I mean, he has a book, right? And so he wrote about it, right?
No.
Interesting. So what does it mean about the three disciples that wrote this? Matthew, Mark, and Luke. What does that mean that they wrote this? And I don't know if I'm asking that the right way. I'll tell you the answer.
We're very inspired.
Very inspired. Yeah. Very inspired would be a good way to say it. Did any witnesses write about this event? So in general, Matthew, Mark, and Luke have these extended versions of this, and not a single one of them saw it. It was either secondhand slash and or inspired, right? And I could just see it now. Yes, it's inspired, so don't take my comments the wrong way. But I could just see it now, because he told them, we're going to jump ahead a little bit here. He says, you know, don't talk about this until, you know, after I'm raised from the dead. We'll get to that in a minute, but I got to say that to make this comment. Like, I could see this, you know, years later or sometime later, Peter, James, and John, you know, getting some people together and just talking about this. And their versions are pulling out the high points and just stuck with them, because I guarantee their minds were blown too, you know? So anyway, I thought that was interesting that none of the three major books that give the whole story actually witnessed it. And yes, by the way, it's very inspired. So did you say that? Good job. Very, very inspired. 100% agree. So did any witnesses write about this event?
Yes.
Yes. So, who did?
Peter.
Hey, this is a class on Peter. It worked right into the lesson. Peter did. So, let's see what Peter actually said about it. Whenever Peter talked about it, he didn't tell necessarily the whole story like the other three did, right? Because this is kind of the second part of our lesson. This is down, I guess, Roman numeral 2 here. We're going to kind of like delve into it a little bit and go back and forth in our lesson, if you're looking at the lesson sheet. So 2 Peter 1, 16 through 21. Would somebody want to volunteer to read that for us?
I can read it.
Okay.
For we did not follow cleverly devised myths when he made known to you the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. For when he received honor and glory from God the Father, and the voice was borne to him by the majestic glory, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased," we ourselves heard this very voice born from heaven, for we were with him on the holy mountain. And we have the prophetic word more fully confirmed, to which you do well to pay attention as to a lamp shining in a dark place, until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts. Knowing this first of all, that no prophecy of Scripture comes from someone's own interpretation. For no prophecy was ever produced by the will of man, but men spoke from God as they were carried along by the Holy Spirit.
So towards the beginning of it, he tells how they heard the voice from the holy mountain, right? And so he's speaking of this time where he actually heard that. So Peter confirms this event as an eyewitness. What he says is almost word for word from the other three versions, right? Of what he heard from, you know, the cloud or, you know, however that they described it. So Peter confirms it. So I guess my point is don't let some people from the world, like in this story, they could easily say, well, no one that was ever there wrote about it and they all made it up. You know, does any of you all ever have discussions with people who are not Christians about just different things? And sometimes they'll bring up different items about the Bible, and a lot of times it seems like they just want to refute. They would. Some people are argumentative, and they think they have a proof, if you will. So in this case, if you're ever talking with someone about that, they say, here's another example where the Bible's wrong. You know, here's three people, they wrote about this great thing, and it sounds really interesting, but guess what? Not a single one was there. I don't believe a word of it. Keep it in your mind. Peter talked about it, and he confirms, if you will, the situation, because he was a witness. So that's something to keep in your pocket if that ever comes up, because things like that do happen whenever you're talking with different people. You might have a different heart, but you still definitely want to talk to people about that stuff. So this is the part that he confirms. This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. We ourselves heard this voice, born from heaven, for we were with him on the holy mountain. So, any questions about that before I go forward? Cool. So, Peter confirms that it actually happened, and that he heard the voice of God. So, let's get back to the event. So, back to our questions. I think this is actually question number 3 down here. But what change took place in Jesus in this story? What happened to Jesus in this story?
His clothes turned whiter than you could bleach it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that statement because I talked about it the other day, you know, like, you know, whiter than anyone on earth could bleach, you know? So he turned white. What other word would, like, describe in general what happened to him? It starts with a T.
Transformed.
Yeah, transformed, transfigured. That's what, let me see if I put that on here. Yep. So out of the 3 stories, this is what it says. And I apologize if I say stories. I already told you last time I have a bad habit of that. So 3 recounts of this event. One of them said transfigured, the other one said transfigured, and the other one says, you know, face altered. So he's talking about how all of his clothes turned white, all of him shone really bright, and how his face was altered and changed. So is there any other place that you can think of, and by the way, I don't know the answer necessarily, where anyone was transfigured in the Bible? Can you think of anyone who was transfigured?
I can't remember which king it was, but he turned into a wild animal.
Nebuchadnezzar,
okay. Did they use the word transfigured for that? Because I know that he was, his actions and his mannerisms or whatever turned more like a beast. I think that's what it said, something like that. But I guess what I'm asking is, I wondered, like, this transfigured word just really eludes me in my mind when I think about it. Like, what exactly does that mean? You know, I can't really put my mind around it except for the descriptions. And maybe that's why, you know, the inspired word put it there, that his clothes were so bright and he was so white and his face, you know, shone like the sun and all this other kind of stuff. Maybe it's just one of those things that you really can't put words to. And that's the closest thing that they put. Did y'all have any thoughts about transfigured, or have you ever thought about exactly what that means? Because it doesn't necessarily, that I'm aware of, you know, you can't look up 5 different people that it happened to and see what that meant or how it happened, right? So,
I mean, after the fact, there was a mention when before Stephen is stoned that his face was shining. Didn't say transfigured per se, but I don't know if that's a similar account or whatnot, mm-hmm. or if examples of face shining would be similar.
Mm-hmm. It could be. Again, as a teacher, you're not supposed to ask questions that you don't know the answer to. You know, so shame on me. I'm a bad teacher. But I'm really interested to hear, you know, your thoughts. Like, if you had any thoughts about transfigured, like, what exactly that means. Whatever it means to you and whatever we read, it was really just something fantastic. And something that they've never seen before. And actually, you know, from what we've talked about, you know, you're not going to see it again. In general. It's not something that happens every day, so to speak.
I wonder if he took on the appearance of God himself. If that's how they could not describe it, because they were looking at God. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just their...
What's really interesting that you say that, so hold that thought for like 2 more slides, and I'm going to come back to you just a little bit. So that's a little bit where I'm drifting into something to help you, or help all of us maybe think about some of these things. So great point, right on task. And I do agree that it's another one of those situations where... we're human, and we're men and women, and how can we describe something that's heavenly and spiritual so well? You know, it's kind of like whenever, you know, God, through inspired word, tries to describe what heaven is like. You know, like all the different levels, and what it's made of, and how long it is, and the streets of gold, and this many miles, and this many cubits, and all kinds of stuff. God is just, through inspired word, just putting it as close as he can to anything we can put our hands on and our mind around. there are no words for heaven, really. I mean, if you really just think about it, there probably aren't. You know, it's going to be a jaw-dropping, if you will, experience. You know, being there and being around it. And if we think that in the Transfiguration, you know, is wider than anyone could ever bleach anything, you know, it's whatever that is, it's got to be. It's going to be. You know, and what a great thing for us to keep our minds on and attain to, or try to attain, for sure. But back to it. According to Luke, what were the three apostles doing when this change took place? And that's in Luke 9:32. What were they doing?
They were sleeping.
Sleeping. And so the words it actually says is heavy sleep. Which, you know, yeah, how do y'all ever sleep and then you're just, you know, like, you're such a light, anyone here a light sleeper? Like, to where you can almost hear, like, you know, the refrigerator in the other room kick on to start making ice or something like that, and nobody but you and like three dogs in the neighborhood could hear it if they had to. You know? Are you all, some people are sensitive like that. Have you ever been like, even people who sleep like that, there's been times, I saw a couple raised hands, when you're heavy in sleep. It's been a long day, you've done something, you've done this, that, the other, you know, you're either physically or with your mind, but boy, you go out, you ever gone to sleep, and you wake up in the same exact position that you went to sleep in, and like your body kind of hurts because you haven't even moved? Has that ever happened to you? It's happened to me. You know when you are heavy in sleep, right? That's a real thing. So it says here they were heavy in sleep. They weren't just, you know, drifting off, you know, kind of like later in the Bible, you know, whenever he goes to pray and he comes back and wakes them up. He goes to pray. And they're, can you not stay awake? You know what story I'm talking about? You know, it's not like these little light sleeps. They were in a heavy, heavy sleep. And then if you read it, it says, if you jump ahead, Peter makes a comment in Luke 32, there, past that, it says, when fully awake, he saw his glory. So we went from heavy sleep to fully awake. Do you know what that basically probably was? He was driving a Ferrari and went from 0 to 60 in no time. So if you've ever been in heavy sleep and you've like woken up and you feel your body hurt, you know, because you haven't moved, you know, how long did it take you to wake up? Probably a little bit, you know, because you've just been there, you know? But if you were in that heavy sleep and you saw what we just described, and you know who Jesus is, you know, the Son of God, you went from heavy sleep to wide awake like that. And in that time, well, we'll jump into what he says here in just a minute. Because whenever you jump like that, like your body, like making that shift, I guarantee you that added a lot to what he says here in just a few minutes. So who appeared with Jesus? Who was with him?
Moses and Elijah.
Moses and Elijah, yeah. I've always kind of wondered, let me not put that up just yet, like, why, number one, how they know it was Moses and Elijah? You know? Huh?
They probably had the picture Bibles.
Yeah, or they had like name tags,
yeah.
You know, or something like that.
Also, these are like, I don't know about Elijah, but Moses is an extremely, you know, he led Israel out of captivity, so he's very famous with them. We're probably very famous with them, any sort of bedtime stories or whatnot. And so I would imagine any sort of scripture with them would have descriptions that would leave little to the imagination.
That's a good thought. I've always wondered about it because, I've never met Jackie Robinson before. Like, I know a little bit about baseball. I like baseball. You know, I don't know if you guys like baseball or not. I like Jackie Robinson, you know. He was a great player for the Dodgers. He stole home. He's really cool player. You know, I've seen him. You know, if he was standing in this room, I would, that's Jackie Robinson. You know, a famous person, somebody that I know about. And even in the Bible, you know, Moses lived how many years before any of these people were ever alive? So how would they know that that's Moses? Because right now, I guarantee you, if I lined up 10 people and I said one of them was Moses, it'd all just be a roll of the dice, so to speak, whether we got it right or not. I've always thought it was really interesting, like, they knew that's who that was, and I wonder, you know, how. But anyway, I won't go down that hole anymore. It's nice to see from your nods and your heads that you've wondered yourself, too, maybe some of those things. But not necessarily just that they knew that that's who it was, but have you ever wondered why? You know, one of my favorite characters to read about is Daniel. Man, like, he came through, like, all the time, you know? I can start naming other people. You know, I don't want to start a list, but how come he wasn't there? He was extremely, I mean, if we're going off influential and always standing for the Lord, like, how come he wasn't there? You know, have you ever wondered why these two? Any thoughts before I tell you what my thoughts are? Go ahead.
Well, okay. So I find this, man. Sorry. Still there. I find this event very fascinating because the last time I studied Jesus' temptation, I learned that there's two other people in the Bible who have also fasted for 40 days, and their names are Moses and Elijah. So to me, that was just like, what? Like, the three people who have fasted for 40 days, the only three people mentioned in the Bible who fasted for 40 days are meeting together. And to me, I just like,
that's a good,
it still
that's
blows
a,
my mind. That I
that's
understand
a, that's that. A neat connection.
So
that's cool. Yeah. I like that. I like your thought. Anybody else? In general, have any comment of why you think Moses and Elijah?
Well, I think Moses because he was promised to see the promised land, so maybe this is a fulfillment of that promise.
Yeah. Also, he brought the Old Testament, and then it's kind of Jesus is the New Testament. So.
Yeah, good thoughts. I like your thoughts. Yeah. And by the way, there's not a wrong answer, you know, to this. Anybody have any other thoughts?
Well, if we're going to... going Mike's lesson that he gave Sunday night with Jesus' description of technically what the afterlife waiting room-esque imagery is, the saints technically haven't gotten to directly to heaven. They're in that like nice part right now. And even it says in the Bible when Jesus is put on the cross, the saints go up to the first resurrection. But Elijah did get straight passage to heaven. That would be my reasoning as to why Elijah would have been the representative of the prophets up there, because he got the one-way passage up there.
Cool. Good thoughts. Interesting.
Could it be that they both like represented part of Jesus' life? Because they're talking about Jesus' departure,
mm-hmm.
and like that's just another word for Exodus. Like, Moses led Israel's Exodus, and Elijah walked with God and never died. And so it's like the two things that Jesus does.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thought. Good thought. I like it. There's a lot of different things that I believe we can connect as to why these two. Everything, you know, each one of you said has merit, for sure. You know, God knows, and it was part of his plan for them to be there. Now, if you talk to, y'all like air quotes, religious people, you know, a lot of people say that Moses is symbolically representing the law, and Elijah is representing the prophets. That's, you know, if you're like, you know, cool Christian person talking on the streets, like that's it, all right? And, you know, I think that and everything you all gave input to, you know, can play into what the final answer may or may not be. One thing that that I found that I thought was really fascinating, that's very similar to what John is talked about, but different. I don't know if you realize this, but Moses and Elijah came close to seeing God's face while they were alive on earth. And this is the interesting part beyond that. Neither could behold his glory. So the Lord passed by each in their stories. So this is Moses. In Exodus 33, Moses said, "Please show me your glory." And he said, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy." But he said, "You cannot see my face." Remember that part. You cannot see my face. "For man shall not see me and live." And the Lord said, "Behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but not my face shall be seen." So you all remember this story, this event? See, I can't even stop myself even whenever I tell you. So here we go. 1 Kings 19. This is about Elijah. "And behold, the Lord passed by Elijah, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave." He wrapped his face. He knew he shouldn't and couldn't see. Very similar, "You cannot see my face." I gotta leave it there before I go to that part. So now to the transfiguration. The Messiah has come, and in him the fullness of deity dwells. This is, his appearance is of God, is bright here also. Except this time, they can safely behold the face of God and Jesus with no fear. Jesus is the cleft in the rock of ages, also a cleft for me. Jesus himself said, "When you see me, you have seen the Father, for I and the Father are one." So basically, the thought is that both of these two could not see God, right? We can't look at God and live. He said that. But Jesus is God's Son, and by them being there, transfigured and looking on his face, it was just like at that moment they were allowed through Jesus to see God, which they couldn't do before, which I think is just an interesting thought. Just like what John said, all these things we're talking about are facts. It's very interesting that they line up this way, that they were not allowed during their life to see God, but in this moment. And as you said, people are in a different place or whatever. They are able to see God through Jesus' face and talk with God, which I think is very interesting angle, fascinating stuff. So, what can that mean for me? So, in general, before they both had fear, Elijah and Moses, to see God. They had fear and respect of God, and they could not really look on him. True? So we should have no fear. Christ is our hiding place. Just like in the cleft of the rock, as the Lord passes by, Christ is our hiding place, and we can boldly behold his glory. We can look on him every day when we read the scriptures and whenever we follow in his footsteps and we look to him for how we should act and what we can do. We can boldly look at him and let him guide us in our lives. We can fiercely look on him and serve him. He is God. He is our creator and sustainer. He is pure. We can look on him by loving and knowing his word. And we're all filthy sinners, unworthy to look on him, just like Moses and Elijah, but Jesus is our redeemer. That's the way we can have a clear path to look to God, to look to, through Jesus, how we should be. Any thoughts? Was that way too deep?
No, I think you're right. That's a beautiful thought. These guys both do represent having been in the presence of God. Elijah, like he said, directly to heaven. And Moses, even when he was on the mount, when he came down, his skin was glowing.
That's what that's
Yeah, they had to cover him with a veil because he was freaking people out. You know, he was bleached white.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, they both have been in the presence of God. What blows my mind is in Matthew 17, Moses and Elijah are talking with him, with Jesus. What in the world? You know? Which shows that on the other side, we're going to see God as he is, and we're going to be able to converse with him person to person. Mm-hmm. You can't do it now. You're not equipped to do it. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. What could they possibly say to Jesus?
Great. That's a whole class.
Amazing. But you're right on. I mean, the fact that he's allowing them to see God's Son.
Mm-hmm. So the only general hint that you will that they drop in there is that, you know, he's, what they're talking about is, you know, Jerusalem and the, I think it says the things to come there or the events to happen there. I can't remember the exact word. But, you know, I've thought like, well, what are they doing? Are they giving them a pep talk? You know, you can do this. Here's your path. And then I'm like, well, no, he didn't need a pep talk, you know? God didn't need a pep talk from anybody, if you know what I mean when I say that. I mean, is he there to, you know, just, you know, we all need a friend sometimes, you know, to build you up and give you more confidence. You already might have 100 points of confidence, but boy, you need 110, you know, were they there for that? I don't know. But I've always wondered, you know, what they actually discussed. I can wander my mind along that, along many other things that I don't know, and we won't ever know. But the good thing is, like what you said, is one day we can ask those questions. We can talk to God. I think one of the greatest things to look forward to, this is a Kelly thing, that, you know, going to heaven, we'll be able to walk with God. Like, I think that's great whenever, it's just really inspiring to me to see how, you know, Adam, you know, walked with God. You know, God wanted to come and converse with him. You know, if we're his, he's going to want to hang out with us. He's going to want to walk with us. Just think about that. You ever gone on a walk with, like, a really good friend, a wife, a boyfriend, a husband, whatever? What do? You talk. Have you ever walked a mile in silence? Doesn't work that way. And think about when you walk with your friend or your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. That's valuable time. Your parents, whoever, your grandma, whatever, drop in whatever. That's valuable time, right? Didn't you almost hang on every word of different things, especially if you hadn't seen them in a while? If they had an opinion about something or they wanted to tell you about something, don't you still hold it in your heart as something valuable? If they gave you an opinion about this or that? Just think about that. We will be able to have that deep of a connection and conversation with the Creator of everything. He will be able to tell us something as simple as, this is what they discussed, and, you know, if you're wanting to know or whatever. That's a very inspiring thought to me, and maybe it is to you, that, you know, that's where we can be one day in heaven.
Is this a good text to, you know, contemplate, will we have identity in heaven? Will we know one another?
You can get me started on some interesting things about that. I don't know. Everybody can, we can all maybe...
Well, they clearly knew it was Moses and Elijah.
Yeah. I've thought about that before, and not to go too far down, you know, this, but I will say this, and we can talk about it after class. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you want to say some things. I know that there would be no tears in heaven, right? You know, it's kind of like there's no crying in baseball. You know, very similar, but a little different. One is heavenly, and one's just, you know, fact in baseball. And there's some people that, you know, I dearly love. And if I could recognize that they were not there, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things. I'm not quite sure. I do know that we'll, you know, be made new. And we'll have a new, they call it a new body. Is that what it was to say? Or a new, you know, made anew, which is how you translation. So, I don't know. That's one of those things that, you know, you can't put your finger on and say this is exactly what's going to happen. And I think that's for a purpose. You know, God has a plan for us. And whatever it is, it'll be the best thing since sliced bread. Because he came up with it. You know, it's his plan. It's his world. So, very deep thought about, you know, whether we're going to know or not know. And we can, you know, go back and forth about some of those things. So what it means for me is, basically, we can look to Jesus and look on him by looking at his word and doing what he asks us to do. And we can, in some symbolic way, you know, be closer to him. Okay, back to the event. I keep jumping on some different thoughts here. So, what were they discussing with Jesus? And we sort of talked about this just a little bit. They were talking about the departure and what needed to be accomplished in Jerusalem. So we kind of talked about that. So how did Peter react when Jesus attempted to discuss this with him and the other apostles? I didn't ask that question very well. It's talking about whenever Jesus attempted to tell them what he was going to do in Jerusalem, that's when he got rebuked, when he was like, you know, that can't be so. You're, you know, who you are. There's no way. So, you know, hopefully, and we don't know, you know, Elijah and Moses, I don't know if they were there for to encourage or what they exactly discussed. So after this, which of the three apostles spoke? Spoiler alert, remember we are in a class about Peter. Okay? So who spoke up? And what did he say? And why do you think he proposed this or said this?
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Peter.
Ding ding ding. Bonus points. Good job. So why did he say what he said, and why do you think he came up with this idea?
Talked about pitching tents, one for each one. And I can't remember, I think it's Luke's account that it said that he kind of said something without even really thinking.
Yeah, you get bonus points too. Good job. I've got that in my notes, Luke 9:33. It says something like, it says he said this, excuse me, not knowing what he said. You know, have you ever, you know, situation come and all of a sudden just something fell out of your mouth? You know, I'm not talking about a weird profanity or something like that. I'm just talking about just something happened and you just had no idea. You know, I've watched, you know, like sporting events or I've seen like some crazy things in nature happen before, like, you know, animals jump out of areas or snakes or something, you know, and I might have said something crazy. You know, has anything ever happened to you where you just said something and you're like, well, why did I say that? Like, that's kind of crazy, you know, that made me seem like a 5-year-old or, you know, or whatever. Has that ever happened to you?
For me, it's when I talk to my spouse like I talk to my kid on accident. You know, you're just, don't, oh.
Yeah, don't, no, it was like that.
Grab it and pull it back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you just, I'll tell you what, you know, since the theme of the other day was, you know, the brilliant white toothpaste, yeah. You got a better chance of pulling that back and cramming that toothpaste back in the tooth. Because it's not going to happen. Because once you say it, man, it's all said. And I guess my point in general is, you know, that's happened to all of us. We've all had a reaction or we've said something when we, like, later on, you know, 3 hours later, like, man, I can't remember what I said. That was really strange. You know, right? True? Raise my hand. You know, everybody else raise your hand so I don't feel so bad. If you're not raising your hand, you're getting points deducted. Okay, I see all hands. Okay, good job. So,
I kind of think in this, like, when I taught last semester, I told my kids that I like to think of it as kind of like a movie. That's kind of where my mind goes when I read stories. And I kind of think of James and John looking back and like, dude, what are you saying? It's like, I don't know, man. Look what's happening. Look what's going on. Like, of course I'm just going to spit something first thing and we'll make a tip. How about that?
Yeah. So, this came up with something. Yeah. They could see them, you know, like later on or poking each other in the background going, what did he just say? Like, what's he, you know,
really,
you know, like, can't believe dude opened his mouth again and said something crazy, you know, or whatever, you know. On a side note, because I like to go sideways, I wonder what all the other apostles thought about Peter. You know? He's the one who jumps first. He's the one who opens his mouth first. You know, he's the one that goes out on a limb all these times. I mean, I just wonder what they, if they were, this is going to sound strange, if they respected that or they appreciated that, or like, I'm glad he went out and, you know, took care of that. I'm glad he's the one who walked on the water, because, dude, if we were going to wait for one of us to jump out of the boat, I'd be number 12. You know what I mean? Are they, do they think about that? You know, what do they think about Peter? And this is another example of, he did something, and I wonder what, like what you said, I wonder what the other two thought, you know, about the whole deal. And in all the versions, it doesn't necessarily say, you know, well, John thought this, or, you know, John was still half asleep, or any of those kind of things necessarily. So we just, you know, don't know. Again, write down on your list of questions you can ask God someday if you really want to know. Yep.
Well, we kind of get the same thing, like if you're ever in a room full of people or like in a class and it's everyone's being super quiet and it's really awkward, you get that one person that speaks up and then the room kind of lightens and it's easier to talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if anybody else experienced that.
Yeah. So maybe it's a situation where it's just nobody really knows what's said, and he's always like the candle that's lit, and now it kind of opens up, and people are able to. Somebody got out there and said something, so now we can say something. Maybe it helps them loosen up, so to speak, or better. Yeah, could possibly be what they thought. I guess we don't know, but anyway, that's a interesting thought. So it basically, it says, you know. He himself is like, you know, not knowing what he said, you know, Peter may not necessarily know why he said it at the time. You know, because remember, he went from 0 to 60, you know, heavy sleep to what the world's going on and all these shining things and Moses and, you know, because what we've learned anything from Peter, he jumps before he asks questions, right? Every time. If anything, at least he's consistent in this spot. So what did the voice from heaven, or the cloud, you know, depending on, you know, how your thing is, what did it say in general? Who's got the answer to that one?
This is my son, and whom I am well pleased.
Uh-huh. And then it talks in a couple of them about you need to listen. They need to follow his example, or listen to him, or, you know, do what he says, or something like that. And this is a good example of us. What that means to us today is a good example to us is that we should still listen to that voice from God through the cloud. This is my son. Listen to what he says. Read through and find out what he says, because within that, you can be redeemed, and you can have life with me, your God. Listen to him. Because I do think that in this situation, he's not just talking to the three and Jesus and, you know, the other two, however you want to absorb that. He's speaking to us today, and he wanted us to know about that, because he says, you know, until this happens to me, then, you know, you can talk and say the story. So again, back to the event. What instructions did Jesus give them concerning what they witnessed? I sort of just said it.
Tell no one until he died.
Yep. And they were even confused about that, sort of, right? About, you know, what's, you know, raised from the dead, you know, all this, like, you know. Any thoughts on Peter's faith, confusion, embarrassment, presence, firsthand recounting of what he heard, etc.? Peter's got a lot going on in this story. Any general comments or thoughts about his role in this, since this is a class about Peter? Okay, we kind of touched on them all, and we have exactly 1 minute and 30 seconds to go through this one. So, this is about the shekel in the fish's mouth. So if you read Matthew 17, 24 through 27, for time, we're going to go ahead and assume you've already read it. So where does this take place?
Capernaum.
Uh-huh. And what did the tax collectors of this certain tax